From NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered's Plus One podcast. I'm Robin Hilton. Bob Boylan is away this week. And you're listening to the music of a band called Worriers. The song we're listening to is called Advance Notice. It's from the Worriers album Imaginary Life. That's Lauren D'Annunzio on lead vocals, and this record was produced by Laura Jane Grace. Now, Laura Jane Grace also fronts the band Against Me. It's a well-established act. They've played big arena shows. While Lauren D'Annunzio's band Worriers is a much smaller and mostly unknown act. But D'Annunzio and Grace were sort of a natural fit to work together on this record, in part because they both spend a lot of time thinking about the same things, like sexism in the punk music scene, gender identity, and some of the assumptions that people make about gender identity. Laura Jane Grace is a transgender woman who, as the lead singer of Against Me, went through a very public transition over the last several years. Lauren D'Annunzio doesn't claim any specific gender identity, but the songs D'Annunzio wrote for this Worriers record are largely about social anxieties. Anxieties over being accepted for who you are. Also anxieties over how to survive as an artist or maintain personal relationships when you're on the road all the time. On this week's Plus One podcast, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to share a conversation Lauren D'Annunzio and Laura Jane Grace had with NPR Music's Daoud Tyler Amin. Daoud has been obsessed with this band Worriers and the music on the album Imaginary Life for much of the past month, but Daoud was first drawn to the music of Worriers in part because of an essay Lauren D'Annunzio wrote a couple of years ago called You Know What Makes Me Feel Unsafe?
I was approached by the blog that published it at the time. It was called I Love Sweat. So it wasn't a product that I already had in mind. They were just interested in posting someone's experience with sexism within the punk scene. And at a certain point, it became clear to me that I just wanted to write something that was more about my frustrations with people who try to say that sexism or homophobia or racism doesn't exist in the punk scene, and how people need to acknowledge that and be able to be called out on those things if those elements are ever going to go away.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I think it's the feeling that we're all on the same page. No one here is sexist. No one here, you know, wants to treat women or queer folks any differently. Like, I wanted to draw attention to the fact that that's just not true. And even if you identify as feminist or you like certain bands or have certain political beliefs, it doesn't mean that you can't screw up sometimes and say things that are disrespectful or are making people feel uncomfortable. You know, I wanted to point out those things that definitely do exist that I think a lot of men specifically aren't always thinking about.
Laura Jane, how does that compare with your experience? Anything familiar?
I have a lot of thoughts on that, yeah, for sure. You know, sexism in the punk scene or just in rock and roll in general is so easily demonstrated by the amount of women or queer people that you see on stage versus the amount of cis males that you see on stage. And if you have a female player, drummer, guitar player or whatever, and they get up and they shred, most people's response that you'll see them get is like, oh, wow, you can play pretty good for a girl, you know? That's like the classic cliche, or even the classic cliche of, you know, the dude handing off his leather jacket to his girlfriend so he can go kick ass in the mosh pit. And those are small level compared to the larger things that happen, you know? It's pretty all over the place, unfortunately.
The first song that I heard from this Worriers record, Imaginary Life, the first song that the world heard, because it was the first single, was this song, They, Them, Theirs. Laura Jane, what did you think when you heard this song?
I love that song, and I love the message behind it.
The song really came out of the fact that you know, I prefer gender-neutral pronouns when meeting people, and even though people are much more open-minded about things lately, and so the conversation goes towards gender expression a lot more, I feel like there is often a pressure to define yourself in a very specific way. Specifically as a queer person, like going beyond that and naming exactly what your gender identity is and exactly where you are on the spectrum and putting a label on that. And I don't really have one, or there's not an easy answer to that for me.
If I could say, I hear in this song the fatigue of having explained something over and over again.
That's definitely something that I really identified with the lyrics and with the song in general, too, was just that sometimes there is that exhaustion of not wanting to, like, not even being able to correct or react, you know, mm-hmm. of just like, sure, I'm going to just let you keep saying whatever you're saying because I'm beat and I just don't even have the energy to get into the conversation with you about it.
Yeah.
You know, in a perfect world, in my opinion, I think they, them, and theirs would be just the pronouns that everyone would use. I mean, I think what makes that so hard for people is just that the binary has been so ingrained in people since day one. That's you know, prevalent society.
Male and female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw a photo of you wearing what looked like a custom basketball jersey.
The gender is over one?
Yeah. First of all, where'd you get that?
I got it from a friend of mine who lives in Brooklyn, who is doing I don't know how you'd want to put it, their art project or whatever, their project, which is called Gender is Over. And I think the idea behind it is finding out what that statement makes people feel.
So this is a basketball jersey that says in big letters, gender is over. And then in really tiny letters, which I had to zoom in on the photo, it says, if you want it.
Right, which is a play off of the John and Yoko War is Over thing. And, you know, it's amazing because, like, I've posted a couple pictures where I'm wearing that jersey on my Instagram or whatever, and people will make just, like, the most offensive comments of, like, no, it's not. Not for me. Like, no way. I'm really happy being male or whatever. It's like, you know, like, that kind of defensiveness is really surprising sometimes, and I think, you know, says something.
For sure, yeah.
But does that part, I mean, I know you didn't make the shirt, but does that qualifier resonate with you at all? I mean, when people say, like, it's really important to me to be male, I mean, what do you think? What do you say?
I wonder why, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder why there's that defensiveness, and I wonder why they would feel challenged. But again, like, that's kind of, I think, the point of the Gender is Over project is it's, you know, not a defined thing. It's about what the statement means to you and the reaction it gets. I'll keep this one to myself.
How much do you talk about the song you're about to play? How much talking do you do on stage when you play live? Either of you.
I don't know about you, Lauren, but I don't really like talking on stage.
I don't either. It's kind of like, and I feel like I should, like, I feel like I'm supposed to rant. I mean, and I have been a little bit more lately, but yeah, no, I kind of hate it.
It's not fair. It's like, I want to be a musician, you know? I want to write songs, and I would like to play them and sing them. I'm not a politician. I'm not a comedian. I don't have, like, I hate, like, coming up with bits, you know, to do right. In between songs or whatever. And when it comes down to it, you know, I used to have such an issue, like, touring with bands, like, when we started doing bigger tours where it was like, oh, wait a second, this guy's saying the same thing every single night before songs, you know? But the truth is that if you're explaining a song, it's like, well, that's the explanation for the song. So you end up saying the same things.
Because otherwise I'm just also terrible at banter. So I can't come up with it off the top of my head.
Right. Yeah. No, it's hard. I think it's, you know, it's not fair to put that expectation on somebody that, like, you have to write good songs, you have to play those songs well, and you have to be really engaging in between the songs. That's why we try to power through a set. It's like, you know, do it Ramon style.
Yeah.
No, very true. Well, it's also like I wrote a song about it. Like, I wanted to talk about it, so I wrote a song about it. So let me just play that song.
Yeah. The reason why I'm curious is because, you know, both of you write from experience, but in so doing, you're also sometimes writing about difference. You're writing about otherness. And I wonder if there's ever a side of it that's burdensome, I suppose. I wonder if you ever feel like it'd be nice to just write about your life and not have it imply, you know, association with a movement, or not have people make that association. But I suppose you can't control what people think or what they do with your music.
No, not at all. And oftentimes, you know, like really that's, you know, songwriting, there should be like the ability for somebody to take a song and adapt it to their own personal life and feelings and come up with their own interpretation of it, even if that's way far off than your original meaning behind writing a song. And most oftentimes that is the case. But oftentimes too, like songs can change their meaning for even you as a songwriter, the more that you play them and the older they get, the more they grow, you know. Mm-hmm. That's just those, that's songs, you know, they're living things.
So, Lauren, I hate to do, because we just talked about explaining songs, but Life During Peacetime?
Sure.
That sounds like a 50s ballad almost. Sounds like Tears on My Pillow. Did it start out that way?
Welcome to Life During Peacetime.
Yeah, I mean, that it definitely started with that, with that kind of strumming pattern, with that in mind.
It made me think of Baby, I'm an Anarchist. Kind of for the same reason. Not because of the words, but just because of that, that's sort
because
of
like... I ripped off the chord pattern for Baby, I'm an Anarchist from a 50s song. That's why.
That's fine.
Because Baby, I'm an Anarchist is just Earth Angel. That's oh. All.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush, 236, we went our separate ways, you fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom.
It might be the same, they might both be the same chords. I don't... You know, like it's, there's only so many.
Welcome to Life During Peacetime.
The thing I like about Life During Peacetime, though, is that it has that, you know, that kind of like a almost sugary 50s thing. But then there's this weird, like almost sinister thing behind it. That's like unsettling, not in a bad way, but just like that takes you out of that like a bubblegum almost thing, you know, where you can tell like it's not painting a perfect picture, you know, or that there is something really wrong actually.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely, it's about that period of time, like the 50s and 60s, and you know, the lyrics are in that sort of a vein that it wasn't all that's cracked up to be.
The chords are just a facade.
Both of you have been the constant in bands that have otherwise gone through lots and lots of lineups. Is that a lonely thing at all? What do you get out of that?
I mean, I wouldn't call it lonely, because I think that it's been a way that bands can function today when, you know, not everyone can drop everything and go on tour all the time. Not everyone can, you know, devote as much time. Not everyone wants to. And so being able to find different people who can creatively line up at different times is a benefit of having things rotate sometimes. You know, Mikey, who plays drums in Warriors, he also played drums in The Measure.
Your previous band.
Mm-hmm. We've been playing music together for over a decade. There are people like that that I, you know, always go back to and have really strong friendships with that that are irreplaceable. So I don't see that being a negative thing at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just more of a realistic idea of what it means to be in a band. I mean, I always say that the idea that it like has to be like these four people got into a room and then picked up their instruments and magic happened, you know, and that's the sound and that's the chemistry. It has to be that. And if anyone goes away, it's broken. Like, is just, you know, that's just not realistic. Like, musicians are kind of like pirates, you know, like, and you have to be free to follow whatever your muse is or wherever life is pulling you, especially if, you know, like you aren't in U2 and making millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, like there has to be that flexibility of like being willing to play with other people, and that makes you change and grow and brings different things to your band and helps you to survive.
Lauren, you wrote something on Twitter I want to say last week, that I enjoyed, which was that when you get home from a tour, as you recently did, that people often ask you if you're ready to go back to the real world.
Oh, yeah.
Does that bug you?
That, well, depending on who says it, really. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, you know, you're ready to go back to the real world. It's like, well, this is my real life. Like, this is just what I do. And you know.
I get that. Like, it seems like the statement in general is saying, like, you know, welcome back to the real world, because that other thing's never really going to work out for you. Like, so
yeah.
That's what the statement kind of implies, right?
It's just
this little fantasy thing you're doing, and that, you know, reality is really you're never going to make it as an artist, which is just crappy.
Yeah. I'm lucky in that. You know, I'm not going home to a desk job that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried really hard to organize my life in a way where, you know, I can play music, I can make art, I can work with artists, and none of that feels like labor that I don't want to be doing, and none of that feels like, you know, the thing that I need more than anything else. Maybe I'm lucky in that, and maybe I'm privileged to be in that situation. But when I'm playing music, it's just as much my real life and my real responsibility and my real work as anything else is. It's the real world. Like, it's,
yeah, it's all, the real world of a working artist, you know? That's the real world of a working artist. That's, everyone's world is different, you know, or their reality is different. And, you know, everyone does what they got to do to get by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how is that, speaking of imaginary life, Laura Jane, you quit school, yeah?
I dropped out of high school when I was 16, yeah.
Lauren, you've got a master's degree.
I do. Well, I mean, I have a master's degree in fine art. I'm not like a scientist or something.
Right, but you have a master's degree from yes. An accredited degree granting institution.
I do. I'm a nerd in that way, yeah.
Uh huh. How is that ever? Do you ever think about what would have happened if you, at 16, had just decided, you know, I'm getting in the van and never looking back? This is my entire life forever.
Oh, I mean, I think about that all the time. I do think about that. You know, I don't regret not doing that. Part of my trajectory and, you know, absolutely going to college right after high school was that I needed health insurance, so. Like, I wasn't going to get a degree to be something specific. I was just trying to get skills and focus on something that I really enjoyed. But also, while I was in college, you know, we started The Measure, and I'm sure that didn't help my college education, going from Rhode Island to New Jersey for band practice all the time and mm-hmm. playing shows and going on tour and stuff like that.
So, you were going to RISD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think I look back on being in school and trying to balance everything fondly, and I'm happy with how things have turned out. So,
Laura Jane, you ever wonder about college?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's kind of pointless just to wonder about that stuff, just because there's so many other factors to it. You know, like, maybe things would have been different had I just not lived in South Florida. Maybe I would have stayed in high school had it been a different high school. Maybe if I had other friends who were going on to college, I would have been interested in going on to college. Or if my family had more money and I, like, thought that it was realistic for me to be able to afford college. Or, like, you know, so many X factors like that, that it's just kind of like, I always knew what I wanted to do, and I was always really kind of singular in that vision. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I also think that from a creative point of view, it's like your life informs the work that you make. And
totally.
Yeah, it's like the what ifs of that can't matter in the end, because, you know, you're writing about what you're writing about.
Right, and there's so many what ifs.
Yeah.
I realize I've been saying punk all this time. What do you guys call your music? Or do you? Do you self-classify?
Usually, I like, in the past, I'd always be like, I don't like to put a label on it or whatever. But then when it comes down to it, like, there's those situations, like when you're going through a toll booth, or when you're all sitting down in a restaurant,
uh-huh.
and the waiter or waitress is like, you know, or toll booth collector is like, oh, y'all in a band? What kind of band? And I will always say, we're in a punk band. And then they'll say, what kind of punk band? And I'll say, you know, like The Clash.
Uh-huh.
So that's always my what I defer to.
I wish I could say that. Maybe someday, almost. But, yeah, sound-wise, anyway. But
Are there logistical reasons? Are there times when you have to do that, like business reasons, or just now that so much music listening is done online and you just have to put something in the genre field?
I wish you got tax breaks, huh? Uh-huh. Punk bands get lower, like a different tax bracket for punk bands.
Yeah, yeah. There's no, the IRS does not identify punk separately, unfortunately. I mean, that's the kind of thing. It's like, you know, I'd select punk, but you know that means so many different things to different people.
Wake up to warm breakfast, hide under covers for weeks.
Lauren, Laura Jane, this has been such a pleasure. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Oh, thank
My
you.
Pleasure.
It was good to talk to you, Laura.
Yeah, you too. I hope you're well.
You too.
That's Lauren DiNizio and Laura Jane Grace talking about the new Worriers record, Imaginary Life, with NPR Music's Dawood Tyler Amin. And you can hear the entire record, Imaginary Life, right now in NPR Music's First Listen series. I'm Robin Hilton for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.